what's called an insertive condom. Mm-hmm.
Or any man who's receiving penetrative sex. Just because you're receiving that doesn't mean you're gay.
Oh, okay. That's right. What was that term? The down low?
Isn't it pegging?
Down low. I haven't heard that in a long time.
Yeah, and down low. But yeah, I mean, I heard there's a... heterosexual guys are being more open to pegging, which is being penetrated by your partner through toys, I guess. Other means. I have to be careful what I'm saying now. Thank gosh, this program's almost over because I'm about to get raunchy.
You just need to keep it clinical. Are you guys both old enough to remember Dr. Ruth?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. I love her.
Yeah. And she spoke very clinically all the time.
She did.
That's what we're required to do here as well.
And we do that at work, too. Yes.
Great. Well, you guys, this has been great public service to have you here today. I'm sorry we didn't get any callers today.
Well, I'm sorry, too. I'm mostly sorry for the city of Portland that they didn't get a chance to ask us questions, but maybe next time.
They can always contact you guys through either Cascade Age Project or Prism Health.
Please do, yeah. Yeah, follow our Instagram, capnw.prevention. We post lots of great sexual health messages and resources there quite regularly. And
Rob, I know I contacted you. I contacted you through something called the Pivot Program. What is the Pivot Program?
Pivot is our testing program. That's our testing department that all we belong to. So it's called Pivot Test.
All my greatest teachers showed me KBOO, a new mental health program hosted by Zan, providing tips and tools along with music, interviews to lighten and brighten in these uncertain times. Join the community every first and third Wednesday from 10 to 11 a.m. only on KBOO 90.7. All you need is love.
Support for KBOO comes from our members and from the Urban League of Portland, celebrating its 80th anniversary as a local civil rights organization. Urban League PDX provides housing, education, health care, and career services to local communities. Membership information at ulpdx.org.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 11:02 a.m. Next up is the Dirtbag.
Are we on? We're good. Jim.
Hey, Glenn.
It's the Dirtbag, I guess.
I think it is.
We're having some technical difficulty in the studio, trying to get our tunes going.
Wow.
Well, good morning. This is Glenn Andreessen, here beside you now until 12 noon. Welcome to the Dirtbag, a garden variety show, mostly focusing on edibles. And Jim Gilbert, to my right, I'm to his left, is with me, fresh back from Western Europe.
Yeah, Italy, Switzerland, Another little trip overseas.
I saw somebody, let's see, where was, oh, I was reading an obituary, I think. Today's paper, maybe. And part of it was that the guy made 58 trips across the Atlantic.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a lot.
Tis.
It was like more than once a year, maybe?
I don't know. I don't know the guy.
Yeah.
I just got my eye. Sure. Anyway, we've got a feast here in front of me. Jim brought in some fruit that he's been harvesting, including some very early persimmon.
Yep.
It's not in the vernacular yet because it's...
Well, you know, and what's really interesting, Glenn, is for a number of years, the goal of our work at Northwoods Nursery, which I describe as half plant factory and half research station, the goal of the work has been to find varieties, either by our own breeding or finding them somewhere else, that ripen early for our climate. And that's what we've succeeded in doing in some cases. So this persimmon that you're seeing is a... probably 3 to 4 weeks ahead of any other one that we've ever had. Really a nice fruit that is ripe right now.
Does it taste similar to the others?
Yeah. This is what we call the crunchy sweet type that you eat like an apple.
Uh-huh.
So it's ready to eat when it's orange. And then there's also feijoa, also known as pineapple guava, which this is also incredibly early. This is one we grew from a seed that we got from a friend in New Zealand.
Oh.
And we've named it after him. His name is Roy Hart. He's probably the most the most esteemed feijoa breeder in the world at this point, in his early 90s. And we call this Early Hart. And it should be out in the markets the plants pretty soon.
Well, we'll get back to that. But that's a large.
Yes.
That's the size of maybe a goose egg.
Yeah.
Certainly a very large chicken egg.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I've seen most of the ones that I've seen are not nearly this big.
Well, I'm bullish on feijoa. I think it's a very cool fruit, and I love eating it. And if the plant is beautiful, an evergreen shrub with striking flowers, so it's worth our attention.
All right. Well, let me give you a rundown of the show. Jim, one of the reasons that Jim was in those countries, well, Italy anyway, was to learn, if you can learn anything more, about olives and pomegranate. And so that's our plant of the month, olives. But I'm sure he can be able to talk about some pomegranate stuff too, anything, what he's learned new. Just some various things that we want to hit. And one of those is harvesting squash. Don't delay. Try to do it before the rains hit. Also, cover crops, same with that. Cold weather's coming. We'll try to give you some tips on how to do that. I'll talk about an experiment that I'm doing with my espaliered apple and pear trees. At half past the hour, we have a garden stumper, and the first person who phones in with the correct answer will be entitled to a free hand gardening tool sharpening from Coley Farm Store in Northeast Portland, 42nd and Alberta Street. Let's see then. Oh, we'll just talk about what's happening in the garden, what's we can plant now or what's available to plant now. I'm sure there's some things that are hitting the store shelves.
Yeah, yeah.
And let's see here. Then also we'll cover, our Dirtbag Dictionary term this month is evergreen, but we didn't get the last ones last month. And so I'll just talk briefly about the differences between, and there are differences between bulbs, tubers, rhizomes, and corms. Mm-hmm. And anything new with the documentary, we'll get to that at the end there too. But what I'm trying to understand this month, and we'll just get this off my plate right now, and this is not a major one, but I'm just wondering why I hear repeatedly somebody giving 150% or 1,000%. I mean, is this another thing where we're going to experience inflation? like I've argued in the past, standing or a standing ovation inflation. You know, I can't go to a concert these days when at least somebody doesn't stand up. Most of the time, most everybody, not me. I like the performance, but I think that should be reserved. Anyway, I think 100% is, you know, it's like being pregnant or not. Can't be more than 100%, can it? An effort be 150%?
And you're speaking about what?
Just anything.
Anything.
I mean, 100% is all.
That's what normally would be the case, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, you can measure things in larger percentages, I suppose, if it's 100% of
yeah. I'm talking about like effort.
Yeah, right. No, that's
in baseball, you know, we measured in thousands. You know, if you bat 300, then you're doing very well.
Mm-hmm. But that's certainly not 300%.
No.
I hit
it's
the
30,
ball.
It's yeah, 30%.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, it's a topic.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you haven't been here very much, but have you used a tool somewhat lately?
Yeah, well, when I got back, so I defied jet lag.
And, wow.
And now I'm starting to feel it. But, but I got back and I fired up the electric chainsaw, which is a funny word to use for firing up an electric thing. But
yeah, that's
I,
right.
And that's when I have this massive pile of branches that were left over from when I left. So I've been chewing away on that. So that's what I've been using.
Uh-huh. And we do want to make this clear that we're talking about a battery.
Yes.
Not
that's
a,
right.
No. Electric could be. I used to have an electric one where you plug that in.
And so did I. But yeah,
the back battery, in the day.
Yeah, battery is very handy.
And what are you going to do with all these branches?
Well, I heat the house with wood.
Oh.
So, you know, but we're kind of oversupplied right now. I mean, you can imagine, you know, on this place that we live on where we've been there for 40 years, it's got a lot of older trees.
Yeah,
So there's a pretty good supply of firewood.
They grew up with you.
Yeah. And also that ice storm we had about 4 years ago. Some of the wood I have this year, Glenn, I just can't even tell you how happy I. It's like it's white oak, oak branches that had fallen off because of the ice storm, and it's like coal. I mean, but it's nice. It's not fossil fuel. It's wood. It's firewood. Boy, I'm thrilled.
Yeah. Yep. Well, I think maybe the tool, just to break it up, you know, I have been using my hand pruners somewhat too, but I would say my leaf rake.
Oh.
Just to not raking up leaves, but branches that I've cut off and and other things. And the chipper shredder.
Mm-hmm.
Got filling up my compost bins. Yep. I mean, I'm past filling up my compost bin. So anyway, let's get it on here. Let's continue with our plant of the month, POTM, olives.
Yeah. Well, and as you mentioned, I was just in Italy, southern Italy, where olives are big. I mean, if anybody's gone to Italy who's listening, they know about how popular olives are there, and they are. With global warming, I mean, which is, I would guess, considered generally a negative thing, but it is making our climate warmer, and probably growing olives 30, 40 years ago was not thought about very much here. But we are now arguably in zone 8A or 8B, I guess, where you are. And olives are hardy, generally speaking.
Well, let me just ask this question here. Is it the global warming, or as far as olives, now our climate becoming more hospitable to that? What specifically is it? Is it the hotter summers or the warmer winters, the more rain or lack of rain?
Excellent question. The main thing is the hardiness. So the other goal of our work, as I said earlier in the show, is to find varieties of fruit that will ripen in our climate successfully. And that means generally earlier than some other places, because we have cool nights, even though we have warmer daytime temperatures typically, we still have cool nights, and we don't have that ripening time that you'll get, you know, probably in Italy, some of southern Italy, so or California or other places. So our goal is not only the hardiness, but it's also the ripening time. And that's what our what we were observing when we were in Italy, varieties that will ripen. We've over the years we have brought varieties in. Some of the best ones we have are from the Nikita Botanic Garden in Crimea, where more than any other place we know of in the world, olive research was done with the same goals in mind: hardiness and early ripening. And some of these varieties we have, one called Magnum, there's Seascape, Nikita Jubilee. We've got a number of varieties from there. They are reliably hardy here, and ripen relatively early compared to some of the other ones. So we're pretty excited about it. And another interesting thing about olives in Oregon, there's some effort or interest in growing in olives for olive oil. I'm sort of skeptical about that for a couple of reasons. I mean, one is the work that we do is focused on plants for the home garden. And, you know, if you've got a couple of olive trees, small olive trees, the amount of oil you would get from those olives is pretty minimal.
Yeah.
You know, I'm much more interested in olives that you can cure and eat, table olives that you enjoy eating, and which we have been harvesting our own olives now for several years and making our own for eating. And it's a great treat to have olives in the winter. And one of the main differences is that the olives that are grown for oil are not typically large. And so they're not so well suited for table use. Some are. There's ones that are both for both. But some of them, like Arbequina, which has been was a popular one to grow here, is a pretty small fruit. So the ones I mentioned earlier, the ones from the Nikita Botanic Garden and some of the other ones that we have, are definitely larger fruit and great for table use.
Now, have you done any research or experimentation with seedless olives, growing seedless olives?
No.
Well, that could be a good one.
I remember years ago, I think I'm remembering this correctly, there was California, there was the idea of fruitless olives, you know, and I remember going to California, I don't know, gosh, 30, 40 years ago, even, or maybe even more recently than that, and olives were just laying all around on the ground because people didn't harvest them. And I thought, this is amazing, you know, like this great fruit just being allowed to fall. But there was then, of course, the people didn't like to have olives laying on the ground around their house. So then there was this thing about fruitless olives.
I see.
So pretty silly to me. But,
yeah. Okay. Well, sounds like you may have do you have some designs now on new techniques or new varieties?
Well, mainly, so part of the journey we took was including a visit to an olive variety collection with 700 varieties in it. And we'd been there 2 years ago, and we went revisited again, and we walked that collection and looking for varieties that have ripe fruit right now. Because we figure even if we're 2 weeks behind here or 3 weeks behind, there's still a potential that a variety like that could ripen here. And so what we're doing is we're working with a nursery in Germany and Switzerland to test these varieties for hardiness there, and then we'll work to bring them in to the U.S. It's our plan.
Okay. Well, but, you might have another trip planned then. Another trip in your future.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely could happen. But it's a very interesting crop. And I might just mention real quickly that the dictionary term evergreen came about because I was thinking of fruiting plants that are evergreen.
Okay.
And olive is one. And we could have a garden stumper on that, but we won't. About which to name.
Well, if our listeners are like me, then you could do that in a year and they wouldn't remember.
Well, if anybody out there wants to call in with another evergreen fruiting plant, it would be. I mean, I'm going to mention it later, but it'd be fun to see what people are thinking about. So,
well, this is a good time to give the number because I didn't do that before. 503-231-8187. That's if you have a gardening question, or when we do the stumper.
Sure,
try that there. Okay, I think we've got our tunes ready to go. Here, this is a collection of songs that refer to some countries that I may or may not be visiting within the next month or so. The first, maybe, is one of my only real Bob Seger song that I like. But this is Kathmandu, Bob Seger.
The West Coast, Warner Brothers are such good hosts. I raise my whiskey glass and give them a toast. I'm sure they know it's true. I got no rap against the Southern states. Every time I've been there, it's been great. But now I'm leaving and I can't be late. And to myself, be true.
Oh, here we are. Are we back? Yeah. All together. Kathmandu.
That's a great song.
Right? Yeah, it is.
I haven't heard that in a while.
Yeah. Okay, more coming up. Let's see here. Just we can both talk about cover crops here just a little bit, that it's still time, plenty of time. And in fact, if you get it in today or tomorrow, the nice rains apparently might be here on the weekend and would be fine for watering those in. I had thought about another Dirtbag Dictionary term, but I thought we should just talk about it right now, and that's the term broadcast. I don't remember if we've talked about this before as a term or not, but some of these, for example, crimson clover or any of the vetches, or just about anything maybe except fava beans and Austrian field peas, which are a little larger. It's just fine to broadcast it with your hand. And, you know, the more you do it, the better you get it at evenly broadcasting those. I don't know. Do you do any more hand broadcasting?
I don't, but I remember learning how to do it. And it's like you described. You practice it, and you hold it in a certain way in your hand. And spread it out, and it works.
Yeah. And you get feedback, but it's not for a month or so.
Yeah.
When that starts germinating, you think, oh, I must have dropped a handful here or something like that. But
exactly.
So it's very easy to do. I mean, you can sprinkle it like your, what would it be if you're just doing it by your fingertips, like you're putting an herb on your food or something. You can do it that way, too, if you don't have a whole lot of space to cover.
Yeah, a few inches.
Yeah, or if you want to put it in a row.
It's true.
Yeah.
Right. Otherwise, I hold it in my hand and just sort of let it come out, you know, at a rate that looks appropriate.
Yeah. Know? You have to, it's centrifugal force that forces it out, I guess.
Yeah.
A little bit of gravity there. But I'm sure most of our listeners have some experience on that. But don't be intimidated by that. Nor the cost of the seeds, because what you get in return is a great value, the amount of nitrogen that is fixed. We'll maybe talk about that another time, too. But so don't delay on those things. Another thing not to delay on, as I may have mentioned, is to harvest squash. Not the summer squash, such as zucchini, which is still producing in my garden, but the winter squash. Buttercup, butternut, you know, there's so many mm-hmm. different varieties, but they're not going to get any more ripe now. And the best thing to do, no matter where they are, the size that they are, is to harvest them, leaving as much stem on as you can, and cleaning it off. What I think is the best, and this is what I understand from the Extension Service, is to put it in a room, the warmest room that you can, for a couple of weeks, just to harden off the skin, to cure it, and then store it cool, 50 degrees or something like that. I generally put them up in an unheated upstairs bedroom.
They keep remarkably well.
Yeah, some better than others. Like acorn squash are not great, but the buttercup, yeah, those will go till you plant your next crop.
Yeah, amazing, really. And I don't know if I told you, I probably mentioned on the show at one point, my neighbor who grows these kinds of squash, and just to give you an idea of how wonderfully valuable our farmland is, 20 tons to the acre is a low yield.
What does he do with them, or they Sells do them. With them, as squash? Not for seed.
For the squash. Uh-huh, uh-huh. 20 tons.
You know, that reminds me, and this ties somewhat into our garden stumper, but this is going to be a clue, that I heard a story a couple of weeks ago about Illinois being the number one pumpkin-producing state. In fact, they produce twice as many as the next five states combined. Wow. That's way out in front.
Maybe those National Guard troops could go harvest pumpkins.
I think they are dressing up as scarecrows, and yeah. and they're running tractors for hay rides.
Great idea. All right.
So that's what I'm planning on doing today, yeah. harvesting those squash. Great. I should have done it, or could have done it yesterday, but I forgot.
Well, if you want to speak for a moment about harvesting, I was harvesting apples. In between cutting firewood, I was harvesting apples, and I brought you one. This variety is Scarlet Sentinel, another one of the columnar types.
Yeah,
and amazing amount of fruit, and this is the late ripening of the four that we have right now, but it's a really tasty apple, and I off trees again, and maybe 3 to 4 feet in diameter, I was harvesting 40 or 50 pounds. I mean, it was tiring me out.
That's a good bang for the buck. And you talked last month about the small space orchard, or postage stamp
orchard. Yeah, yeah, this would be another really good variety to put in there. Scarlet Sentinel.
Right. Yeah. What about cold weather? It's coming. You know, probably don't really need to worry about it too much for the next month, but you won't need to be irrigating. So I'm thinking this is a good time to be getting your hoses and irrigation systems either picked up or drained.
Yeah.
So they don't freeze. And it's much more pleasant to do that this month than next month.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Especially when you, the forecast is calling for 25 degrees. I better get my hose in.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was 40, we were 39 the other morning.
Oh, my.
Out in the Liberal Nook.
Yeah.
It was, chilly. But, the main thing I think about with summer, with cold temperatures coming, are the plants in pots that are outside. Of course, we're not going to likely have really hard freezes for quite a while, but, you know, that can be dangerous for a plant that's just, sitting outside its root system can get frozen, and that's something you really want to avoid having happen. So,
yeah,
you know,
bring it in or put it next to the foundation or bury it.
Yep, cover it with something if you have to. But yeah.
Yeah.
But that's a ways away, I think.
Yeah, we'll both be here next month, and we can talk about that. Okay, and then before we get to the garden stumper, I'll just talk about this experiment that I'm doing. You know, I used to say I had 40 fruit trees on my 60 by 100 lot. which is a lot. But it, more than half were our espaliered apples and pears. Mm. And the only, and just a little background now, the only fruit that I recommend for espaliering now are apples. Pears have a different growth habit than makes it conducive for production on espaliering, because oftentimes their fruit is on newer growth. They do have spurs, but if you want to keep your espalier narrow, which is kind of the or one of the ideas of an espalier, for me, I was cutting off that productive growth every year. Mm-hmm. And so I was doing all this work, but wasn't getting much fruit in return. Mm-hmm. And the same with apples. Part of it is just because, you know, in the city, I know, Jim, you don't have the problem with the codling moth or the apple maggot fly. But, you know, I have to bag them or protect them somehow. And if I don't, then they're just kind of worthless. They drop off. But I have so much other fruit that, well, I'm not too concerned. And the reason that I had so many back in the day, I still have them, is because I was demonstrating a lot of things in my home garden. I don't do that so much anymore. And I just don't need that much fruit anymore. But I haven't been getting much fruit because of these worm or larvae damage in them. Mm-hmm. So I would bag some, and those would be great. I just, note to self, I just got to do that. But it's just a pain to do pruning on these because, you know, that's a lot of trees, even though they're pretty small. Mm-hmm. So my experiment, because I was thinking I'm just going to take some of those out and put, you know, something else in there that wouldn't take as much pruning or any pruning. But I thought, nope, I'm going to give this a year with this experiment. And I pruned them with a chainsaw. Like a hedge.
Wow.
I just got my not with a chainsaw, but I have hedge battery hedge trimmers also. Mm-hmm. And so I just ran it on the sides and on the top. You know, like I'd prune my privet hedge or any kind of hedge, really. And we'll see what that does. I mean, it's going to send out growth, but will it have, it'll have less, fewer blossoms. Maybe less growth, but it's going to send out, you know, at the end of each cut stub, I just headed them back. They weren't thinning cuts or anything like that. They were just cut in the middle of branches sometimes. But so we'll see. I'll keep us informed on that.
Yeah, my guess would be that you'd probably, it's probably not the first year, but the second year you'd have really good crops.
Yeah.
You know, once they get.
Well, I might have to go for another year then. But I'm going to continue to do the pruning. And part of what was driving me in my thinking on this is that I remember from years ago, OSU Extension did experiments with pruning blueberries with blades, you know, mechanical blades. You know, they'd come down the sides, give it a side cut, and then on the top, they would just top it. Mm-hmm. So you'd have a square plant, essentially. Mm-hmm. And that, from what I remember, is that the production was as good. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as far as labor, a lot better.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, that's one thing neat about these columnar apples that we've been growing is that because we just I don't have the time to prune them.
Yeah.
They don't get pruned. And they're all spurs and they just keep producing fruit in the same place. So,
right.
You know, I mean, I'm sure they'd get probably even better production if I pruned them.
But, you know. But do you want better production?
Well, exactly. I mean, I'm overflowing right now with apples. You know, taking a bunch to my daughter in Bellingham and grandkids and stuff. So, yeah.
Okay, Ty, are you ready for the garden stumper? We're ready. Okay. Well, this is, like I said, this is another state question. It's not exactly state, area. So here it is. What commercial crop does Oregon, Washington, and Idaho produce That accounts for nearly all of U.S. production, and that is about half of the production in the world. Okay, I'll read it again. What commercial crop does Oregon, Washington, and Idaho produce that accounts for nearly all of U.S. production, and that is about half of the production in the world? Pretty impressive, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you don't know what it is, though, do you?
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, you're not eligible for the start in any ways. 503-231-8187 if you know the answer to that little nugget.
Uh-huh. That's a good one.
Okay. Well, in the garden and farm, what are you planting? Planting anything yet? Are bare roots trees available?
Well, that's what I was going to comment on. I've always felt like... Especially here in Oregon, where we have a really relatively mild climate, or Washington, this is a good time to plant. If you'd like to plant an apple tree or pear tree or another kind of fruit tree, our winter temperatures are mild. The ground is relatively warm. Roots will grow. And then by next spring, when you might normally think of planting, you will already have an established plant that will be a little ahead. And
you think those are available? Well, those are available now.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, as bare root or as potted?
Probably potted.
Yeah.
It's early for bare root, but potted plants are fine. I mean, there's always I talk about potted plants. It's really important to, when you plant them, especially in the now, is another reason it works well is because the plant's going dormant. So you can do a pretty good job of loosening up the root system, and you will not inhibit growth because the plant is stopping growing anyway. And that's really important with a mm-hmm. potted plant is to, if depending on how dense the root system is, I put them on the ground sometimes and I just massage them and then start loosening them up and spread them out in your planting hole of the roots and make sure the top of the soil the top of the soil in the pot is the same as level as the soil where you're planting, and I think it's almost a guarantee you'll have good success with that.
And then water it,
watering it in is a good idea.
The late Lucy Hardiman, I remember her, and she would soak her potted plants for a day or overnight before in a 5-gallon bucket before planting.
Yeah,
because it might take that long for the water to soak in.
It doesn't hurt. I mean, if the plant's well watered when you get it, it's not necessary to do that.
But if you see bubbles coming up, then you know. Okay, Jim, we have a call.
Oh, great.
All right, Ty, who do we got? Okay. Good morning. You're on the Dirtbag. Still? Not there. Okay, well, that person. Oh, wait. Are
you there?
Yes, I'm here now.
Excellent. Okay, I'm not sure what happened there.
No, me neither. Okay, you have an answer?
I think the answer is Filbert's hazelnuts, but I'm not sure.
Well, that's not a bad guess. It's not the right one, but it's something.
No, I'm very curious.
Well, I think that Yamhill County, this is maybe from some years ago, produces something like 99% of the nuts in, now I can't remember, is that in Oregon? It must be the U.S.
Yeah. The figures that I remember was Oregon produces basically about 10% of the world's hazelnuts, which, of course, Filbert's is our own common local name for them. But I don't think it's so much in just one county, because certainly where I live, there's a lot of hazelnuts.
Yeah, that's old data. But still, the vast majority of those nuts come from Oregon in the United States.
That's right.
And I think Turkey is the overall producer of hazelnuts.
Yep. Yes, that's what I remember, that they supply the rest of whatever we don't.
Yeah. And the price our hazelnut farmers get is largely dependent upon the crop in Turkey. So
that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So good guess.
Well, thank you, folks.
Good guess. You bet.
I'll stay on to find out what it is.
Okay. Very good.
All right. Take care.
Yeah. Bye. Let's see. Any other phones, Ty? Yes. Okay. We have another garden stumper. Good morning. What's your guess?
Potatoes?
No, that's another good guess, especially when we threw Idaho in there.
Yep.
Yeah.
Or cherries?
We'd have to... No, it's not. It's neither of those. I can give a hint later on when if nobody's getting it, but nope, not yet. Okay, I think we had another call there. Yes, but we'll see if Ty gets to that. Oh, that one's gone. Okay. So, planting now. Ty, let's take a musical break here. He's on the phone, and more phones are coming in there. But I'll just give you some background here, because I have a little something written here. Uh-huh. As far as I know, the country of Bhutan is the only country that has what they call a GNH, the gross national happiness. And can you just imagine the United States adopting this? Because these are the nine interconnected domains that reflect a comprehensive view of human and ecological well-being. So the number one is psychological well-being. The second is health. Third, education. Fourth, time use. Fifth, cultural diversity. Hang on there a minute. Just hang on. Nobody be there. The fifth is cultural diversity and resilience. The sixth is community vitality. The seventh is good governance and ecological diversity. Good governance. Eighth is ecological diversity and resilience. And nine is living standards. I don't know that we might brush up against some of those, especially now. Only brushing, but that's pretty good.
That's nice. Yeah.
Okay, so while Ty, is our caller still there, Ty? Isaiah. Okay, and you can get the our next musical tune up there then. Okay, Isaiah, what's your guess?
My guess is Christmas trees.
Gosh, we have smart listeners. That's not right, but these are all good guesses.
Ah, I thought I had you.
Huh. Okay, well, stay
all
tuned.
All right, dirtbag. See you later.
Yep. Okay. Should we go to the tune? Okay. So this, then, in honor of Bhutan's and the gross national happiness, is Brian Auger, English pianist from... He's still around, as far as I know. But anyway, this is Happiness is Just Around the Bend. Okay, Brian Auger from the album Closer to It. Just a good album all the way around. Okay, are we back to the phones? Yes. Good morning. Who do we have here? Okay, are you with us? Still coming. Okay, well, we will... If we get the person on the line, then we'll come back to that. Let's see. So let's talk a little bit about storage. Anything else you want to say about storage of these vegetables or these fruits that you have in front of us here?
Well, you know, storage, of course, typically anything that you have, like we talked about the squash, which, of course, is a pretty good keeper, apples, some varieties that we have keep really a long time. My favorite one right now is a variety called Wine Crisp, which I was eating in July.
Oh, that's right.
For previous year's crop.
Yeah.
And that was kept in a cooler, a walk-in cooler, so the temperature was like a cold refrigerator, the high 30s. And that's the clue to really long-term storage is some very cool place, because obviously the winter's pretty good, but when it starts warming up in the spring, apples and so forth will start to spoil if they're not in a cool location.
Well, what if somebody, do you have any advice if people don't have cold storage?
Well, as cool a place as you've got.
I mean, do you recommend, you know, in straw or in sand or anything like that, which is sometimes recommended for potatoes, which are hard to really store for maybe more than 2 months.
Yeah, and I think the reason for that is also keeping the moisture level up with those. But that doesn't seem to be an issue with apples, for example.
Yeah.
So basically, just dry storage, but cold. So if you've got an outdoor shed someplace where you don't want to, you can handle a slight bit of frost, but not much.
But isn't it, you know, the humidity in the wintertime can be, 90%.
Yeah, but that's not an issue for...
So I thought you said, moisture, no moisture and cold.
The moisture being something surrounding the fruit that's moist.
Oh.
You were saying, putting something in sand or straw or something is, typically holding more moisture right at the surface of the skin. But yeah, with that, I mean, my experience with apples has been just keeping them cool as possible.
Okay, just eat them as soon as you can then.
Yep. Yeah, that's not too hard to do.
Right. Onions, we've missed kind of the storage, talking about that, or maybe we did talk about it over the summer. That's when we would generally harvest the onions. The only thing that I can say now about onions is just leave as many husks on as you can. Mm-hmm. The more, the better. Don't try to pretty them up.
Right.
And you can do that when you bring them in.
Yeah.
But aren't that many other vegetables that we actually store?
Some people, I've had some success with, like, for instance, with carrots. We're just leaving them in the ground.
And beets, too. Beets.
It was where, they'll stay, well into the winter in good shape.
If it's gonna freeze, then get out there and put something on top of them. I've had carrots below the frost line. Mm. Or further down, still good, but the tops were mushy. This was a particularly cold.
Yeah. It is really amazing, again, thinking about our climate, because I have friends who live in Vladivostok, Russia, and typically the soil there freezes a meter deep, 3 feet deep. It's hard to believe.
It is hard to believe. They probably have a hard time having the right number of chill hours.
Well, that's one of the issues with Siberia and why some of the plants from there, like Arctic Beauty Kiwi, starts growing really fast, because it doesn't really need chill hours.
Uh-huh,
which is, remember that chilling is
right.
Stops at 32 degrees or zero Celsius, and then below that, it's not being satisfied, those chilling hours. So
and when does it start again? 40 something?
45 or thereabouts.
Okay, 45 to
32 Fahrenheit.
So those are the only chill hours that count.
Yeah. And I was just in the Celsius world, so I'm thinking Celsius.
Lucky
right now.
You.
we talked about that, I think, in the last show.
Yeah, really, yeah, we did. Minus 40. I still remember the answer to that.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of answer, do we have any calls, Ty? Oh, yes. We got somebody hanging on. Okay. Good morning. Do you have a guess? Yes.
It's hazelnuts.
What was it?
Hazelnuts.
Oh, hazelnuts. Nope. No, we had an earlier caller that suggested that. In fact, our first one there. Yes.
Okay, well, thank you.
Yeah, good guess.
North Portland.
Okay.
You have a lot of
So, any other calls? Yes, still got calls. Okay. Put them on.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing this morning?
Very well, thanks. You got an answer for us?
Yeah, I do. I remember when I was younger riding my bicycle through Corvallis, and I could it smells like hops.
That's it.
I was thinking, that's it.
That's it. Yes, yep, hops.
We have so much beer up here.
Hops, yes, yes. And good hops. I mean, the ones
the
that
best.
They right. That's, you know, they come to this area to get hops for all over because they are such good quality. Mm-hmm. It's also the same with cranberries.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they keep their color so well. In fact, I was just down there in hops country.
Willamette Valley?
No, that's, Cranberry Country.
Mm-hmm. Cranberry Country.
Okay. Down there in
South Coast.
Yeah, Bandon area
Bandon,
around there.
I love Bandon. That's one of my favorite places in Oregon. It really is.
Well, the only drawback, and then we camped with my wife's brother for a couple of nights, and then we were heading down to the Redwood National Forest.
Oh, nice.
Which it would have been just beautiful to go right on down 101. No, 101 closed for the weekend that we were traveling there. They were replacing a culvert.
No. That is such a beautiful drive. You missed out.
Hey, we got to travel on I-5, though.
Lucky you.
But we had to go.
At least you went through the soporific hop smells of Corvallis.
Well, no, we went back through or came out south of Roseburg, Winston.
Gotcha.
And it was a nice drive through Coquille, and that was good too. We didn't see the ocean or the beaches or the rocks, but we had quite a bit on Bandon. But anyway,
I'll just tell you a funny thing. My grandmother was born in Norway, Oregon.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, wow.
That's down there too.
It's all I guess a little west of Coquille.
Yeah.
So
that's so nice over there.
So anyway, if you would like a garden tool sharpened for free at Coley Farm Store in Northeast Portland. Stay on the line, and Ty will get your contact information, and he will give that to me, and I will then contact you. So good.
I've learned so much from your guys' show, and I really thank you for that.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, it's nice to hear.
We like feedback of all kinds, but particularly the kind words.
Great. Have a great day.
Yeah, you too. Okay, good. Yeah, hops.
Yeah. Cool.
Okay, Ty's on the phone still. Okay, so we'll go on here. What else are we talking about there? Oh, well, we've wrapped up the story. Just talk a little bit about bulbs, tubers, rhizomes, and corms. The difference here, I have some things here. Bulbs are central shoots. Bulbs are central shoots surrounded by layers of modified leaves or scales wrapped tightly together. Perfect example of a bulb, daffodils. Everybody's probably planted a daffodil. Okay? I think onions also qualify as a bulb. Yep. They're not a tuber because tubers are swollen underground stems that store nutrients and energy for the plant, often resembling thickened roots. A good example of a tuber, potatoes. Mm-hmm. Rhizomes are horizontal underground stems that grow horizontally, sending out roots and shoots from nodes along their length. What I consider an excellent example of a rhizome are irises. There's probably some edible, I know there are, like horseradish. Mm-hmm. Is that rhizomonous?
Sounds like it.
Yeah. Right. And then we also have corms, and I don't really have much information on that other than examples, which would be crocus or gladiolus flowers. Hmm. Those are corms. That's the difference.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Well, let's see here. Do we have anything else? Oh, yeah. Let's talk about the Dirtbag Dictionary term.
Sure.
Evergreen.
Sure. So I got inspired to do that because I thought about olives being an evergreen fruiting plant. And so evergreen, of course, as opposite of deciduous, evergreen plants are ones that hold their leaves in the winter. And there aren't too many fruiting plants that are evergreen. But I was thinking about others besides olive. And again, like if any caller has one in mind, I'd love to hear that. I can mention them here in a little bit. But the challenge, of course, with evergreen plants in some climates are they're not typically as hardy as deciduous plants that lose their leaves. And so the ones that I know that are particularly hardy, you get down to around zero Fahrenheit, maybe a little below. But then you're getting into some challenging times with them. But of course, they do have the beauty of having leaves in the winter, which is kind of nice. And so, for example, I will tell some other ones. So,
yeah,
pineapple guava or feijoa, which we talked about, is a beautiful evergreen shrub that we can grow perfectly well here in Western Oregon and Washington. One that a lot of people aren't so familiar with is loquat.
Oh yeah,
when I walk to the show from Southeast Clinton Street, I walk along 12th Avenue for a little bit, and there's a loquat tree that's been in this yard by what I understand is a Buddhist temple for at least 60 years.
Huh.
Really nice, beautiful loquat evergreen tree, and then one. That my partner Lorraine mentioned to me this morning, and we're talking about it, is one that's not so common outdoors here, of course, but grows very well in a container, and that's citrus, oranges, and lemons, and so forth.
That would have made a good garden snipper.
Yeah, yeah. So,
well, it could be, not counting, you know, feijoa, citrus, and olive. What's an edible evergreen?
And loquat.
Oh, loquat, right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that would be a good one. I don't have an answer for that even.
Right,
myself,
right. But, it'll come to us next month. Here. Oh, yeah, I remember that there too.
Yeah.
So, okay. Maybe we'll just leave our last musical thing until the end so we can give you a minute on the anything new on the documentary.
Well, before I do that, I wanted just to share with you a little bit about these fruits that I brought.
Okay.
Yeah. So
that's right.
So this is a jujube called Empress G, and you're welcome to eat it now or take it home with you, Glenn.
I'll eat it out. I'll do it after the show.
Sure. And then we talked about the persimmon, which is called cardinal, which one that we brought from Korea a few years ago and are just amazed at how early it is. Like, it's just like I said, 3 to 4 weeks ahead of everything else that we have already ripe.
And the skin is edible?
Totally.
Oh, yeah, because
like
it's another criteria that Jim has to meet. Edible skin.
Well, that is sort of true, yeah. I mentioned earlier the feijoa, which we were so fortunate that our friend, this breeder in New Zealand, gave us a package of seed that he didn't plant himself because his goal was not early ripening, but he thought these had some potential, and this particular one is a shining star in our little orchard of feijoa. We call it Early Heart. We have some other ones from him, Kakariki, Kaitiri, and Atoki, that are also really excellent ones. And I just can't recommend to the listeners more than this. It's just that feijoa is a plant that you'll really enjoy.
You won't regret.
You won't regret.
When did you plant the seed that started this?
This is about 3 years ago.
Oh, only 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Outstanding.
Yep. And it's a nice size fruit. I mean, it's a really good one, and of course the apple, which was again the sentinel, the scarlet sentinel,
yeah.
The columnar apples, which is that's just like really fun right now because there's so many of them, and I've
you want to get rid of them.
Any listeners
almost,
that want right. to come out to the nursery. So that's you can certainly take these home.
I will.
I am going to take this with me because I'm going to share it with my brothers after the show.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
There might be more next.
Yeah.
Oh, totally. Next month.
Totally.
Yeah, that's more like it. Yep, okay. Yep. All right. Now we only have half a minute for you, Jim.
Sure. So
anything new?
Well, we're still working on the classroom edition of the the film, the documentary film, which I hope every listener has watched, at least the short version of it, and you can all go to that at www.anoregonstory, just like it sounds, anoregonstory.com, and watch the film. And I'm just constantly amazed and grateful for the people who came before us who saved Oregon's farmland. And there I am out in South Clackamas County looking at blueberries and hazelnuts and cows and vegetable fields 40 minutes from Portland.
Yeah. All right.
So, you know, it's worth a look at the movie and do your best to help us keep Oregon, Oregon.
Thank you. All right. Thank you, Jim. Ty, thank you very much. We'll go out with our last tune. This is from Sly and the Family Stone. It's I Want to Take You Higher, and this is in honor of Tibet and their capital city of the autonomous region of Tibet, Lhasa. And you know how high Mount Hood is, 11,235 feet or something like that? Well, Lhasa is at 11,995 feet. So, you know, 600 feet more. All right. This is Glenn Andreessen. Thanks for listening.
Listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Jazz Lives, right after these news headlines.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM.